Welcome into today's edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Gab Marcotti going to be by in just a little bit to discuss some controversial comments from Barcelona's interim president about the possibility of selling Lionel Messi. Speaking of controversy, Xhaka's power rankings will be back as well. But we start with more fallout, more reaction to Manchester United's 3-1 defeat at Old Trafford against PSG on Wednesday in the Champions League. Joining us, Julian Laurent and Don Hutchison. Jules, I'll start with you. You were at the match. Craig on yesterday's show said PSG were poor. Where do you come down on this? Were PSG bad yesterday? Just lucky that Anthony Martial had a terrible day finishing?
I mean, I don't think we watched the same game. They were, obviously, they had strong moments in the game and more weaker moments in the game. But like every team, it was the same for United, of course. Martial missed a huge chance, especially the first one. And then Cavani hit the crossbar. PSG also had chances. I watched the game again today. And they could easily have been 2-0 up, for example, at some point in the first half. Fred could have been sent off halfway through that first half. So if we start looking at, you know, what could have happened on if and buts and all of that, the debate will never end. In the end, they had to show a lot of personality, a lot of character. They did that as a team. I've rarely seen them this season playing with so much unity, with so much character, personality, like they did. Neymar came big and scored the two goals. I thought he was terrific, considering he's not even fully fit. And I just thought that overall it was a very good performance, the way they kept the ball in the first 20 minutes. Then when they had to dig deep and they did that, and when United were on top, they were on the back foot, but yet they kept it together, and I think they went through that all together. And then when they had to be sharp offensively, they were. And I think they deserve their win and they deserve to be top of that group right now.
Don, where do you come down on this? Did PSG deserve the 3 points or did United give them away?
I think a bit of both. I mean, I talk about personality and character. I commentated on their last game against Leipzig, and Leipzig were terrific. Leipzig probably could have won the game 4 or 5, but what I come away from that game watching PSG is they showed loads of bottle in the game, and that's always been a question mark that's been, I think, landed towards the PSG players. Are they just flair players? They're good when they've got the ball. I'm seeing a little bit of a different side to them. I think Thomas Tuchel's a little bit spiky as well. But the game against Man United was a high-quality game. And United, yes, granted, missed some chances. But I'm with Jules, really, the first half especially. I thought PSG were excellent. Neymar looked sharp. Mbappe gave some loose balls away. But when he had the ball at his feet, no one could get near him. You know, he's very tricky. Step-overs are all coming off. And when it's Champions League, high stakes, you know, I think everyone wants to look at a game of football and think, well, PSG should be brilliant because they've got Neymar and Mbappe. They forget the opposition that's playing against them. And Man United played well in the game, but the scoreline doesn't lie.
Don, for all that, and they're all fair points, Anthony Martial misses a sitter, and that very much could have changed the story of this game. Jules, it's obviously easy to say this now in hindsight, but the decision to keep Anthony Martial and instead sell Romelu Lukaku hasn't aged well for Manchester United, has it?
No, but the different style of strikers, the different players, the things that Marcel can bring you that Romelu can't, the thing that Romelu does really well now, Inter, that he didn't do really well when he was at United. You know, I think he wanted to leave as much as they were ready to sell him. He didn't really feel the love that he's feeling right now, Inter and in Italy with Conte, than he did at United. There was always a yes, but, you know, his first touch or his finishing, he never scores against the big clubs, blah, blah, blah. And I think Romelu had enough of that. So it's as much down to United's fault than Romelu himself. And it's far more complicated than just, oh, they kept Martial and they sold Lukaku. But Martial had a really good season last year. Yeah, of course, he missed two, especially the first one, big chances on Wednesday night against United, which a striker of his calibre or forward of his calibre should not miss. But that's not why United lost the game. They lost the game because Fred was allowed to come back on the pitch on the second half by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, which should have never happened, who, by the way, should have been sent off in the first half. They lost the game because defensively, once again, in the second half especially, they were just not good enough. And Solskjaer said at the end of the game, it's a game that you lose in both boxes, not just in your opposition's box when you create the chances and you should score them, but also in your own box and the way you defend.
Don, as far as Martial concerns, obviously the question with him for the last 12 months has been, is he good enough to lead this Manchester United line? When he misses a sitter like that, do we have our answer in a big game?
Well, I've never been convinced in terms of him being a number nine. I think he's a guy that can come off either flank, especially the left-hand side, and looks dangerous. Last season, I think he had his best numbers, and he was starting to convince people. But I don't think he's a natural number nine. When I speak to people like Michael Owen, they're not convinced he's got the desire and the hunger. You know, I think they've got to be ruthless. When you're a number nine and you want to get the amount of goals that the top end strikers get, you know, you see what impact Cavani's had since he's been at Man United. He is a proper number nine. He makes number nine runs. When he's in front of the goal, he's normally prolific. He was another one that was very unlucky when he hit the crossbar, when he lobbed the goalkeeper. So I think you can see Anthony Martial is always going to be inconsistent because of where he plays. His best moments in the games come from that left-hand side. When he's playing as a centre-forward with his back to goal and he's got two centre-halves behind him, it doesn't come naturally to him. So I get the comparisons with Lukaku, two completely different players, as Julian said. And Lukaku now, you know, as he has been over the years, has always been prolific. He always looks as though he's going to score goals. He misses one or two, but all strikers do. But I don't think Martial will ever convince in the short term that he's going to be Ollie's number one, number nine.
Martial could have had a brace. Neymar did have a brace. Beautiful on the third goal, really an individual effort that starts it, and then he's able to finish it off. And yet, strangely, this player, no matter what he does, seems to divide opinion, even just down to a performance like the 90 minutes that we saw yesterday. Don, you said that anybody who doesn't rate or like Neymar, and you tweeted this, knows zilch about football. So how do you explain then the people who watched yesterday's match, and I'll even count myself in one of the and didn't think Neymar played well outside of really that one moment?
Well, that's what the top end players do, Seb. They have the one moment in the game.
They disappear for 90 minutes. They disappear in a Champions League final. That's what top-end players do?
No, not always. I mean, the best players turn it on, but they don't turn it on for 90 minutes. I understand the question. But I think when people watch Neymar, I don't think they like, and I'm one of them, by the way. I've criticised Neymar, so this is not a Neymar loving, you know, 100% from me, because I've criticised Neymar when I watch him for Brazil and when I watched him for Barca or for PSG. Sometimes he acts not great on the pitch, when he rolls around, when he gets fouled, when he dives. Those actions don't sit well, I don't think, with viewers. But when you strip all that back and look at actually what he does when he's got a ball at his feet, I can only think of Messi that's as naturally as gifted as Neymar is. There might be better goal scorers. Ronaldo might be a better goal scorer. And there might be other players that, you know, Kevin De Bruyne, for example. There might be, and there's loads of examples where you think, well, they might be better players than Neymar. But in terms of individual skill and flair, and balance, and technique. The guy's a genius.
Jules, you were there. Wonder what you thought of Neymar's performance, but also Kylian Mbappe, now almost a year in Champions League without a goal. What's going on with this player?
Yeah, if we start with Kylian, he's not fully fit. Let's be honest. Let's start with that. You saw again on Wednesday night that he was not just there yet. When he accelerates with the ball, I think mentally, he's on 99 goals for PSG. I think he's maybe trying too hard to get to 100. He knows that the stat that he hasn't scored since December of last year in the Champions League. And I think also that's a weight on his shoulders. And I think maybe he tries too hard to get that. And at times where maybe he should not shoot or take, you know, and going for goal, he does. And I think that's counterproductive. So apart from that, I don't think there's any worry to have over him. For Neymar, I just thought he was brilliant. Of course, sometimes he disappears, and of course, sometimes he loses his head a little bit when he tries to take on the whole world on his own, or he tried to take on Fred and McTominay on his own, for example. And God, how much McTominay, you know, kicked him through the game. But everything that PSG did well in that game, from keeping hold of the ball and being well organized, to creating danger, obviously the first goal he scores, and that's a hell of a finish, by the way. That's not an easy finish at all on his first goal. The second goal, as you mentioned, right at the end, a move that he starts by taking on three United players and then runs 60 yards, and then in the end still has the intelligence and the lucidity to stop his run, move away from Maguire to then have a simple tap-in. A lot of people would have stayed where they are after running all that much, the whole length of the pitch, but he had that intelligence of stopping the run, take that step back to have an easy finish then. But everything else, the header from Marquinhos on the bar comes from him, the backer chance come from him as well. All the differences that he made, I just don't understand how you cannot rate him after the game like this. Of course, all the antics, I understand what Don is saying, and that's a fair point, although I think he's slightly improved a bit on that. But overall, technically, he's incredible.
We've danced around it a little bit so far in this segment, but let's get to one of the big talking points from the match. The decision to leave Fred on after the, I don't know, can we call it a headbutt, sort of headbutt of Leandro Paredes. It was, of course, discussed on today's edition of the Gab and Jewel show. Here's Gab and Mark Ogden going back and forth.
I just want to explain, because a lot of people don't seem to understand, and it really, really gets my goat, how VAR works and what happened here. So VAR doesn't just intervene when there's a clear and obvious error. VAR can also intervene if the referee requests it, or if the referee hasn't seen an incident or hasn't seen it clearly enough. Now, what happened in this case is he didn't see it. No, he didn't see it clearly. Him, yeah. It was behind him, right? So he goes to look at the monitor. This idea that, oh, he's got to look at the monitor, now he's going to change his decision. No, he had no idea what happened. He goes to look at the monitor. And by the way, I know that Nicolas Pepe is fresh on everybody's mind. This idea that you have to send somebody off if they go head-to-head and they lean forward, I don't know if that's a Premier League thing. Or that's not a thing, okay? It might be a thing in England, but different leagues have their own directives that they give to referees. It is not a hard and fast rule Europe-wide. You have to look at the context of it. And I don't blame him in that context, because it was not an aggressive headbutt. It was two people going head to head. I think booking both of them and moving on might have been the sensible thing to do.
Yeah, I actually sympathy with your view on that, and the fact that it shouldn't always be a red card. It wasn't a heavy headbutt, and Paredes deserved to be booked as well. But the referee didn't really look at it. He went over there for maybe 3 or 4 seconds and just turned his back and decided on a yellow card. But, you know, we're all kind of schooled in this country to believe that you put your head in somebody's face, it's a red card. Maybe we need to look at that. Maybe it wasn't that dangerous after all.
It depends on the context. I would have had no issue if he'd sent him off. All I'm saying is everybody last night, the ex-pros, blah, 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 people who frankly should know better, including ex-referees, going on about, oh, it's an automatic, you got this so wrong. You can say you got it wrong, but it is not an automatic red card, certainly not as far as UEFA are concerned, and it's a UEFA competition.
It wasn't an aggressive headbutt. We like those non-aggressive headbutts, according to Gab. All right, so one-word answers from each of you. I'll start with you, Jules. Was it a red card?
Yes.
Okay. Don, was it a red card?
Yep.
All right, if we assume that it was a red card, should have been a red card, surely everybody on the Manchester United technical staff saw that. A lot of people saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should have taken Fred off at the half. Don, you agree?
No, totally. Sebi, you have a perception when you're watching the game, and you know, Ollie's got Michael Carrick on the bench with him. He's got guys that have played the game on the bench with him. The manager should see this, especially when you take into context of where Fred plays. Fred's not a winger that might make one or two fouls a game. He's a central midfield player. He's an aggressive midfield player that likes to tackle. And as Jules said, you know, he should have been sent off from the headbutt, which I think was on 25 minutes. 5 minutes later, he could have been sent off in a 50-50 with the same player, Paredes. And then you get to half-time, and you must know that Fred's going to make one or two more tackles in the second half. It's what every midfield player does. So the chances are Fred is going to get sent off in the game. And I couldn't believe when I seen him come off for the second half. It was one of the most straightforward calls I think I've ever seen in football, where you just knew you were watching that game. It was a chance for either Matic to come on, or Pogba, or Van der Beek. Take your pick. Probably Matic, being a holding midfield player. And I was stunned that Ollie left him on.
Speaking of managers, Jules, did Ollie's opposite number, Thomas Tuchel, save his job with the result?
Yeah, I think so. Just quickly on the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. At the end of the first half, Maguire goes to see Fred and said, hey, you have to calm down. You know, you can't keep going like this and tackling and blah, blah, blah. After they came back out of the tunnel for the second half, the referee himself goes to see Fred and said, you need to calm down because I've got my eye on you. I have to because of that first half. And then what does he do? He goes and gets sent off and does crazy stuff like that. It's just, I can't understand it. For Tuchel, he bought some time for sure. He was under huge pressure. What he wanted was a response from the player in terms of unity, in terms of, okay, we have to attack together and defend together. We have to win or lose, but together, which was not the case against Bordeaux in the league, for example. Even against Leipzig, they defended well and dug deep, but they collectively, it was not a good performance. They hardly attacked. And I think the players answered him and did what he said. And I thought tactically, the 4-3-3 worked well at the beginning. They changed to a back five. That worked really well. And I think he outsmarted Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on the game.
Don, Tuchel may have saved his job for now, but let's be honest, PSG is going to be judged on Champions League. And frankly, like whether they win it or not. Stevie on yesterday's show said there's no way that this PSG can win the Champions League. You agree?
Listen, I wouldn't say no way, but I think it's highly unlikely. I do. I think there's better teams. And individually, PSG will always, you know, give any team a game, that's for sure, because of the standard of the players they've got. But I think when it comes down to an 11v11 and you start putting teams like Bayern against them, I think there's two or three teams that are stronger than them. You're never quite sure what performance you're going to get. Julian's right in the Leipzig game, where they showed a lot of bottle in the game, but they didn't play well and they were lucky to come out of that game. In my opinion, Verratti should have been sent off for a two-footed tackle and when he came off the bench. So I think overall, I think it's only a matter of time. I think Tuchel was always going to be under pressure because you're right. You know, PSG will be, and Tuchel will be judged on what he does in the Champions League.
Jules, one of the knocks on this PSG team, or maybe one of the concerns that we've heard time and time again from Tuchel is the lack of depth, the lack of players that weren't brought in over the last transfer window. Given that, is there some bit of ruing from PSG of the fact that they let guys like Cavani, Thiago Silva go, and now we see what they're doing elsewhere, and PSG doesn't have those options?
Yeah, of course, that's a fair point. Leonardo and the club would say that it was time to move on from that era of Thiago Silva, who'd been there 8 years, who's 36, and Cavani, who's been there 7 years, who's 33. I can understand that view as well and that point. Of course, they could have stayed for another year or two and still, as we see now with Chelsea and United, bring a lot to that team. But they decided to go another way. What we saw at Old Trafford, which I like, is Rafinha came on, had a really good impact on the game. Even under Herrera, who's one of the most intelligent players that they can have, such a team player as well, comes on and has a positive impact as well. Of course, you could always have more depth, and certainly in certain positions like fullbacks, for example. But the other thing that we can't forget is that Thomas Tuchel has never been at all able this season to play strongest 11. Never, at no point, because of COVID, because of injuries, because of suspension, he hasn't been able so far to play strongest 11. And I think you need to keep that in mind when you judge the possibilities of their ambitions in the Champions League and things like that, because the PSG strongest 11 is a really good team. The team that we saw yesterday was far from the strongest 11.
Three teams tied on 9 points in Group H. Fascinating stuff waiting for us next week. Don, Jules, thank you very much. Plenty more ESPN FC on your screens tomorrow. We'll be discussing all of the weekend action in Europe and beyond. Craig, Shaka, and Stevie on board for the show.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Barcelona's interim president Carles Tusquets making headlines with this quote. Economically speaking, last summer I would have sold Messi. It would have been the desirable option for what you bring in and what you save. La Liga has strict salary limits. Gab Marcotti joins us. Julien Laurent still with us. As well. All right, Gab, I'll start with you. I don't know if Carles here is wrong, but these quotes are certainly jarring. What's your initial reaction?
They're jarring, but they're probably not entirely surprising. I mean, the reality is Barcelona's financial situation is dire. It's not only because of the pandemic that they find themselves in this situation. They made poor decisions with wages and signings, and you know, the easiest way to get out, there's only two ways to get out of these situations, right? You either increase revenues, which is really difficult to do during a pandemic, or you cut costs, which means you sell players and get rid of them. And Lionel Messi makes more money than anybody else at the club by far. So I think that's what he means. I don't think he's necessarily being serious. He's using it to tell us just how horrendous the situation is.
Jules, as a Barcelona fan, I think the last thing you want to hear is anybody at the club talk about Messi leaving, either in the future or in the past. But it's kind of hard to argue the logic here. If they would have sold him over the summer, they would have gotten an incredible haul. Now, if he walks this summer, I mean, for their biggest asset, they'll get nothing. There's some validity to what he's saying here, isn't there? Have they missed that opportunity?
Yeah, completely. I think he was being honest. And you could always argue that a president, even if he's just a caretaker president or interim president, should maybe not be honest and should have said but Messi is Barcelona, Barcelona is Messi, we want to keep him forever, blah, 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 all of that. I think he was honest. Of course, it made more sense financially to let him go. Last summer, you could have had maybe, let's say, 150 million euros, maybe 200 million euros, plus you save all the huge wages, as Gab just mentioned, on Messi, and you can reinvest that money and do it cleverly this time, not like before when Neymar left and you spent crazy money on players who were not worth it. So, of course, I think it makes a lot of sense, but you're right, if you're a fan, that's not what you want to hear, because you know how likely it is that Messi could walk out in the summer, and that has brought it even closer.
Jules, you mentioned Neymar, of course, after the match against Manchester United. He comes out and says not only does he want to play with Messi again, but he wants to do it next year. 12 months ago, this would have been a conversation about Neymar returning to Barcelona. Is it for real, though, that Messi could end up at PSG?
I think it's more for real than Neymar, obviously, going back to Barcelona to play with Messi there. I think right now, the only club, I guess, technically, where it can happen, where both of them can be together, is in Paris. And I think Neymar, let's not forget what the question was. The question was, do you want Messi to come to Paris, to play with you in Paris? That was the original question. He answered, yes, I want to play with him again. And next season will be great. Let's try to make it happen next season. And I think Neymar was genuine. I think there will be discussions in Paris. They've already happened about, can we do it? Can we bring Messi if Messi wants to come? If he's really on a free transfer, obviously there will be a signing on fee, but if there's no transfer fee to pay to Barcelona, what can we do? Can we afford him? How much can we pay him? Does that mean that we have to let Kylian Mbappe leave and go somewhere else? Do we have to let Di Maria go, who's out of contract in the summer? I think all of this is happening in Paris right now. And I think Neymar was very intelligent in the way he said it last night after the game, where he played so well and scored those two goals. Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG chairman, was there. They had a huge hug. I was there right by the pitch. And I think Neymar never does things like this without being prepared or without thought about it before. And I think there's certainly something in that for sure.
Gab, not a lot of places that can afford Messi, but PSG certainly on the list. What do you think of it?
I don't think PSG are on the list of clubs that can afford Messi, to be perfectly honest. I mean, not without selling Mbappe or something like that. Even going back to what Tusquets said about, oh, I would have sold him over the summer. Well, you know what? The club decided, like, do you mean you would have sold him or you would have let him go for nothing, like supposedly wanted to do? Because you would have found people who were willing to take Messi on a free, but this whole idea of selling him, of actually getting money back, whether it's 50 million, 100 million, 150 million, I don't know. I'm highly skeptical that there was anybody who was actually willing to do that, willing to go that far, which is a big part of the reason why Messi ultimately, I think, stuck around in spite of what everybody said. So, even somebody like Paris Saint-Germain, they still live in a world of financial fair play. They've already been stung by that. They've had to make cuts because of that. So the idea that just because Neymar says so, oh, look, hey, Kylian, bye-bye, go away, go somewhere else, go to United or Real Madrid, and we'll take Messi here, I don't know. I just don't see the numbers adding up, unless, of course, Messi's willing to take a dramatic pay cut and move somewhere else. And, of course, that would be a game changer. But that's something we very, very rarely see. And look, rightly so. He's entitled to earn whatever people are willing to pay him.
Gab, Jules, thank you very much. Plenty more from the boys on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Today's edition, spotlight on the managers, Ole, Tuchel, Conte, and more. Download it today.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Great article up right now on our website from Derek Ray, previewing the top of the table Bundesliga clash Saturday. Bayern Munich, Leipzig, available for you, of course, on ESPN. Plus, for more perspective, we're joined from Germany in his giant orange throne by Archie Rintott. Archie, good to have you with us. Let's start with Leipzig. Really feels like a decisive week coming up for this club, not just domestically, but also in the Champions League against Manchester United at home. What basically boils down to a must win.
Yeah, as you say. I mean, the way that Leipzig see it is that their minimum expectation in Europe was making it through to the Europa League knockout stages. And that is secured now with that result in Turkey as well. It was already secure given the way that Başakşehir have performed before that as well. But I think that for Leipzig to continue establishing themselves in Germany, they need to be challenging Bayern at the top. And they're 2 points off them right now. And that's after having lost Timo Werner and Patrick Schick from last season. Alexander Zorlot, their multi-million euro signing, 20 million euros he cost them, had not been firing at all until scoring the winner for them away against Başakşehir. So I think that's a real boon for Leipzig to have that kind of relief off his back going into this game. I don't know whether Zorlot will start, but the way that they are attacking right now, they're creating chances, they're able to box in their opponents. And I think that the fact that Bayern rested 9 players during the week against Atletico Madrid shows you, or made 9 changes even, shows you just how seriously Bayern are taking this threat that Leipzig will offer.
Elsewhere in Germany, we've got Borussia Mönchengladbach seem to have what would have been a critical late equalizer. Of course, it gets waved off, the goal from Alassane Player, probably rightfully so. When we look at this Gladbach team, though, I wonder what the confidence level is in Germany that they can get the job done, specifically in Champions League. Because of that result, they now have to get something out of the final match day trip to Madrid.
There has not been a game in the Champions League so far this season where Gladbach have not competed, and I think that's what will rile them, is that they're going to Madrid needing a result, knowing that they should already be there by now. Okay, they're playing against Real Madrid and Inter, and for them to be on the same level as them shows some really great development. But at the same time, those goals, those late goals they conceded against Inter and against Real will really craw in the throat somewhat if they don't make it. They missed Nico Elvedi at the heart of their defence the other night, I think, particularly in the second half when Tony Janschke had to go off. I think that Dennis Zakaria really struggled to get a hold on Romelu Lukaku, not the first player by any means, but you could see that his natural position was not as a centre-back. But I think that should Elvedi recover in time for that game in Madrid, I would say that regardless, they've got a chance of going there and qualifying. And if they were to qualify, what an achievement.
Archie, we can't mention Gladbach without talking about Marcus Thuram, the 23-year-old French sensation. He was one of the many topics of discussion when you sat down with Gladbach sporting director Max Abel earlier this week. Let's listen in.
One of the players who has really shone under Marco Rosa, amongst many, is Marcus Thuram. How does your process start with signing somebody like Marcus Thuram? When did you first start scouting him? Because I know that you love to plan things far in the future. I remember you saying after the whole situation 5 years ago when Borussia lost the first 5 games of the season that you have a plan for everything, but you didn't have a plan for that. Where exactly did your planning start with signing Marcus Thuram?
First of all, we have to say we have a great scouting, and the guys work a lot and saw a lot of games and see a lot of games. And so if we start a season, for example, this season, we start in summer 2020, this season, playing in the Football Bundesliga, playing in the Champions League, we in the back office, we start to plan the season 21-22. And so we have our squad, we see our squad, we analyze our squad, we see the duration of the contracts. So We knew in 2018, if you start the season 19-20, that Thorgan Hazard has only 1 year more contract. And he was 26 at this moment, and we had the feeling, okay, if it's not possible to extend his contract, we have to work together to find a club to make a transfer. And so it means the position left winger, it was the position, one of the position, we looked for at this moment. And for this moment, we go to our scouting and we ask, okay, we're looking for this position. And then you have, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 player for this position. And in this range was also Marcus Thuram. And then, till this point, the scouts looking this player. But from this point on, Stephen Correll, my left and my right-handed, and me, and the coach, is looking for the player. They look games, they look interviews, they look everything around to have a clear picture of the player. So then we decided in April 2019 to sign Marco Rose. So it means we have a new coach. The process was 8 months before, started 8 months before. But directly from this day, this was a big advantage that we signed Marco in April, that you could speak with him about the new squad. And we had the position with Thorgan Hazard. It looked like that he went to Dortmund. It looked like that we will reach a good transfer fee. And so with these 12 guys from the scouting, in the end it was Marcus Thuram. We said, okay, this is the person, this is the guy, this is the player. We try to sign. And Marco has the same meaning. This is very important because not the club, not only the club makes a transfer, the coach is very important in this part. And from this point, we decided to speak with Marcus. We wanted to meet him. We wanted to meet his father, to speak about the project, to speak about the idea with Mönchengladbach. And so it was, in the end, we saw him 35 times live. It means not by television, it means in the stadium. We had a great picture of him. We knew him from the youth national teams from France. He played in Guingamp, the club relegated in the second league of France. He scored 9 goals. So it means he has something special. And this whole picture, in the end, it was 1 year project. It was possible to sign Marcus then in summer 2019. And yes, it was again a great deal from us because Marcus is a top player for our club.
With Marco Rosa, there's been a lot of talk about how well he's been doing here. How much longer do you expect him to be here at Borussia?
So we work now 1.5 years, and he has again 1.5 year contract in Mönchengladbach. But in my point of view, it fits perfectly. It fits perfectly because this is the right coach for our club. He can work, he can develop young guys. He is a coach. He wants to be successful in every single game during the Bundesliga or on the training pitch. He stays for success. And this is exactly the coach we needed 1.5 years ago. And I hope that he will stay a long time. But if you see our history in the last 10 years, we lost a lot of good players. We lost Lucien Favre as a great coach. And the day will come, perhaps Marco Rose will go to another club, to a bigger club, hopefully not in the next 3 years.
Let's see.
But I don't know.
Sure. Lucien Favre, you had a very good relationship with him here at Borussia. It sometimes feels that his work at Borussia Dortmund right now is not necessarily being appreciated. Is that because of the way that German football has gone, where in the last 8 seasons, 6 of the seasons that Bayern Munich have played are the best 6 seasons in terms of points ever that's been played in Bundesliga? Do you think that's a contributing factor there?
I think the problem of Lucien Favre is that everybody hopes that Bayern Munich is not the champion. And therefore, everybody put the hope in Lucien Favre that is possible for him to bring Dortmund for the next champion. And Lucien Favre is a top coach. Lucien Favre is a top coach, and he has his own way of thinking on football. But this is all the time for me the biggest question: Is it the right coach for the right club? So it's not all the time that you find the best coach. You have to find the best coach for the right club. And Lucien Favre is a different style than Jurgen Klopp, and everybody could compare Jurgen Klopp to Lucien Favre, but these are totally different coaches. And for me, Lucien is the best coach for Borussia Dortmund, and I'm sure if everybody trusts him, he has the chance with these young players, with this team, to compare with Bayern Munich and to beat Bayern Munich as the champion.
Archie, great interview. Interesting stuff there from Abel, especially on Favre. Let's stick right there. Things are getting tough. No Erling Haaland for an extended period of time coming up. And then the embarrassing loss against Cologne. Things are pretty bleak right now for Favre and Dortmund, aren't they?
They are. But at the same time, what he does is he develops young players, as he did at Borussia Mönchengladbach quite memorably with Marc-Andre ter Stegen and Marco Reus. The thing is that enough at Borussia Dortmund? In terms of the bank balance and rolling the club for the next few years, it certainly is, because they're going to make a lot of money off the likes of Jadon Sancho and I would imagine Gio Reyna one day as well. The thing is, it's to do with that shadow that Jurgen Klopp still casts in terms of a personality. And I think that Lucien Favre is penalised a little bit because he does not have that same larger-than-life personality. But then again, who does, really? But also, the football that they play, it's not we're going to score one more than you. It's a lot more trying to find the perfect chance and the perfect opportunity to shoot. You notice, for example, that Bayern Munich this season have scored 7 goals from outside the box. Dortmund are yet to score a single goal from outside the box in the Bundesliga, which shows you the kind of patience that Lucien Favre wants from his side. The problem is, does that kind of patience work still with this kind of young team where you just want to almost let them loose at a certain point? And I think you can sometimes sense the frustration. So his contract's up at the end of the season. There are meant to be talks in January between him and the club. I'm not so sure that Favre will still be there next summer, but it depends on how close, it depends on the style as much as anything. The points tally might not matter that much.
All right, Archie, thanks as always for your time, your perspective. Dortmund plays Frankfurt Saturday, that game, of course, on ESPN Plus before Bayern and Leipzig. After Bayern and Leipzig, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, we've got the Derby of Berlin, Hertha against Union.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Almost 800,000 subscribers over at ESPN FC's YouTube channel. So much content from the show and beyond included in all of that. Frequently is Shaka's power ranking. Shaka Hislop joins us now. Don Hutchison back with us as well. Shaka, we've had a 2-week break from your power rankings. I'm not suggesting that that's a good thing. I'm only suggesting that you've had plenty of time to work on this specific edition of the power rankings. Explain your picks 1 through 10.
Let me just say, before I get to my power ranking, Seb, that all 800,000 of our subscribers thought my last power rankings 2 weeks ago was the best they'd ever seen. Let me just tell you something. I've exceeded myself here. I'm not sure how they get any better than this one. Right. I'll just run through them. Bayern, AC Milan, no surprise. Spurs, Liverpool, Chelsea, the big movers this week in the power rankings, despite the draw, I'll get to that. Glasgow Rangers, Sporting, Braga, and then PSG and Ajax are the two that I was a little bit uncertain about. But the top eight, let me tell you, that's as good as it gets. Mm. I'm not sure it gets any better.
All right, and not sure it gets any better. You clearly copy and pasted 6 through 8 there. No worries there. Don, your thoughts?
I mean, Shaka, please explain how Bayern are sitting top when they got battered against Hoffenheim a couple of months ago. Tottenham are still in third when we all fell asleep watching them at the weekend against Chelsea, and they drew 3-3 tonight. Glasgow Rangers haven't moved up a few. Unbeaten in all competitions all of this season.
Shaka?
Okay. Well, let me address it first. Welcome back after being under that rock for the last couple of months, Don Hutchinson, since Bayern Munich last lost to Hoffenheim way back when, 2 months ago. You say it. Yeah, they're romping away with everything, but never. Well, welcome. I'm happy to see you here. Who else we got? Who else?
Milan.
Or Spurs. All right. No. Now, my thing with, no, you then brought up Spurs. I understand the criticism. Spurs just doing as, you know, not being all that thrilling. But you get a point with Chelsea in the most Mourinho of fashions. It's a point at Chelsea, who are one of the best teams in the Premier League. You take that. Listen, and then you join the Europa League, but, you know, you'll be through. I see no issue with that. So I have no problem with Spurs being there. The big movers this week were Chelsea. Again, they drew, but then they responded, beating Sevilla by 4. So they get a big jump. I think they jumped over six spots from 2 weeks ago. They're the big movers. Oh, and of course, Glasgow Rangers is who you... They drew with Benfica a couple of weeks ago. Running away with it in Scotland, great. So they're in. But they drew with Benfica a couple of weeks ago. So they moved... No, they stayed the same as they were 2 weeks ago. So I see... I don't buy your arguments, Don, is what I'm really trying to say.
We should note, Chelsea, what, moving 5 spots. You had them at 9 last time, down to 5. Don, of all of all the things you're going to pick at Shaka for, the number one thing can't be that Bayern Munich is atop his list. They're obviously the best team in the world.
No, they are. I said that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But how Spurs have not moved down after drawing 3-3 against LASK, I will never know. Mm. When Glasgow Rangers are unbeaten in all competitions all season and Milan are flying. Mm.
Shaka, tell him you don't watch Europa League. You don't watch Europa League. You don't factor
Milan
it in.
I watched Milan beat Celtic tonight 4-2.
Milan, where are Milan, Dom? You can't be complaining about Milan.
Top.
They're second.
No, but they're top in the league.
They're second in the list behind Bayern Munich.
I'll give you that.
I was a little bit nervy about PSG. I'm not so happy with PSG, but I'll get them. Go on. Have a spot this week.
All right. Begrudgingly putting PSG in there at number 9. The boys will be back taking your tweets on Extra Time. Hopefully it doesn't get as heated as this, but maybe it will. And that's the fun. Make sure to download the latest edition of the Siri Awesome podcast. Mina, Nikki, Matteo, Kay, and Gab. Sometimes Gab. This week, they asked the important question, are Juventus, who are currently 4th, still title favorites? Latest episode available online. Speaking of Serie A, of course, it's available for you on ESPN+. Big matches coming up this weekend. Juventus are at home Saturday against Torino. Inter Milan at home as well. They'll face off against Bologna Sunday. A bunch of good games, including league leaders AC Milan away to Sampdoria.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
MLS, by the way, they're also in playoff mode. Semifinals as well. We call it the conference finals here. In the East, that means Columbus Crew hosting New England Revolution. 3 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday. That game available on ABC as well as ESPN. Deportes. English Championship on ESPN Plus. Just the one match in the championship on Friday, but it should be a good one. Barnsley against Bournemouth, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. Bournemouth currently second in the table. And then one more bit of news, that the Final Four set for next year's UEFA Nations League finals to be played next October in Italy. The first semifinal will feature Spain and the host. That match to be played in Milan. The second semifinal, Belgium against France, a game to be played in Turin. All right, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to you for watching. Thanks to everyone who was involved in the show as well. Right now, what you've been waiting for, Extra Time. We're joined by Don and Shaka. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Thursday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. We have your tweets. We have Shaka Hislop wiggling his head weirdly and Don Hutchison acting totally normal with us as well. Shaka, first question for you. Who's the best player not to have won the Champions League? Ibrahimovic, Brazilian Ronaldo, or Buffon? I can't believe we put a goalie in as an option and are expecting Shaka not to take it. Go ahead, Shaka.
Oh, I was about to say, I was wondering where you're going with that one. I can't believe you put a goalie in involved. Ibrahimovic has never won the Champions League. That surprised me. Who's the other option? Ibrahimovic, Buffon, and who?
Brazilian Ronaldo.
Oh. Brazilian Ronaldo's never won the Champions League either?
There you go. Some big names, yeah.
Wow.
Goodness me. I'm rather strangely, I'm going to go Brazilian Ronaldo. Mm. I still think Brazilian Ronaldo is one of the best players to have ever played, and you can make a very strong argument for the best of all time. That being said, as much as I love Gigi Buffon, as much as I love Zlatan Ibrahimovic, I'm going to have to go Brazilian Ronaldo.
All right. Don, I don't know if you caught it, but on yesterday's show, Frank mentioned that he receives insight into what Chelsea fans are thinking from his special Chelsea group on social media. So the question here from Frank McManaman, one of our frequent tweeters, is who gets better insight, you from Frank Lampard or Frank from his Facebook group?
I've not texted Frank for a little while. I can't imagine what Frank's doing on a Facebook group. I mean, what info is he getting there?
We're told he has a lot of friends on Facebook, so you know he's quite a popular guy on the social networks.
I'll give it to Frank then. I'll give it to Frank.
All right. I have to get back to those contacts. Next question. When Mourinho first came to Chelsea, what style of football did he play? And if it was counter-style football, did he receive the same type of criticisms he is now receiving with Spurs? Don, you remember that far back?
I do, but I don't. My memory of his Chelsea days weren't that bad. I mean, there was games in certain games, especially the big games, where he was a bit defensive. That was Jose's style. But my recollection of his whole time there was quite positive. And I think it's a natural reaction. I think when you go into a new job, you want to be hard to beat. You want to keep clean sheets. So you're not exactly going to try and score 5 to 6 goals every single week. That's what we're seeing at Tottenham at the moment. Early on, they were scoring goals. Now they've tightened up, and I don't think they're a bad watch apart from the game at the weekend, I must say.
Shaka, Mourinho's definitely gotten more pragmatic, or whatever the word you want to use, as he's gotten older, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, without question. I remember his early days, and I remember how much the league needed Chelsea, Mourinho, and Abramovich at the time, just to challenge Manchester United and their ability to spend. I can't, you know, remember the tactics specifically, but I remember at no point thinking that Mourinho or Chelsea under Mourinho were negative or just pragmatic. But it's certainly within the first year or two, that was my impression. But slowly but surely, it became that way. And in particular, in the second spell, where I thought Chelsea were just playing for a 1-0 every single time they seemed to take the field.
Don, people are coming for you in today's questions. Why is no one, especially Don, talking about Moyes West Ham and a good start, given that most of the panel predicted he would be sacked early? Don, defend yourself.
Well, I can't believe, Sebi, that Shaka hasn't got West Ham in his top 10 mm-hmm. in the power rankings.
Classic deflection tactic here, right? I'm not the bad guy. The other guy's the bad guy.
I know, but he's done an unbelievable job, isn't he?
John, if West Ham beat Manchester United on the weekend, West Ham are in.
Where though? Where are they going in?
One. Best team of the universe.
Shaka, people take your power rankings far too seriously for you to do that. You are former Hammer of the Year, the internet tells me. Why have you turned your back
Sebastian,
on your club? Why aren't they in the power rankings this week, Shaka?
Good question.
Because I want them to be underestimated.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure it's on the bulletin board there in the dressing room. Next question from Dan, the That's Orange right. Man. What were the worst refereeing decisions your team was on the end of during your playing days? Don, is there one that stands out?
It is easy. Merseyside Derby, playing for Everton at Goodison. I score a goal off my backside at 0-0 in the Gladys Street end with 5 seconds on the clock. It hits my backside, it rolls over the line, and just as it gets over the line, Graham Pohl blows his whistle for full time and he declares it didn't cross the line when it actually did. 0-0 instead of Everton winning 1-0. And Evertonians still go ballistic over that decision today.
Shaka, you got one?
I've let it go, though. I've let it go.
Clearly.
I'll give you two. One was rather inconsequential. I remember playing, this is in my very early days, this is probably my second season, playing for Reading, away to Grimsby of all places. Grimsby scored, and the ball was seriously about 4 or 5 feet over the line. I was just lying there. And saw the ball just kind of right next to me. I'm well in the goal, and just kind of punch the ball out of the goal in frustration. Everybody stops. Grimsby run away celebrating, and the referee just shouts, "Play on!" Nobody knew what was going on. I mean, the ball was so far over the line. I was just lying in the net. Just at this point, just kind of giving up. And the referee shouts, "Play on!" So we just kind of, somebody runs and just clears the ball. It was the most ridiculous thing. The other decision.
Mendes won at Man United. Pretty sure Pedro Mendes scored a goal.
Was that Roy Carroll?
Was Roy Carroll? Yeah. Tottenham Man United at Man United, about 3 yards over the line. Referee, play on.
Yeah, unbelievable. The other bad decision I was involved with, that I say with a smile on my face, NCAA final 1988, playing away to Indiana. Indiana are given this dodgy penalty. The referee is none other than Dr. Joe Matchnick, which mightn't mean anything to Don, but Sebi, you know only too well.
Totally, yep.
Dr. Joe, so, and then in the post-game press conference, I absolutely hammer him. Then I come back to the States, join FC Dallas, and in preseason, they have referees come, well, as they do in England, and the referees come and talk about the law changes and what's to be expected, etc., etc. And Dr. Joe was the referee who came to Dallas and came up to me after that talk, and we spoke about that 88 Indiana final and had a little laugh about it. Well, he laughed. I was still grimacing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dr. Joe.
Yeah, for those who don't, Dr. Joe, a pundit now effectively on American television, does a lot of like the referee analysis, so he's pretty well known. You guys clearly have a lot to work on when it comes to letting things go. Don, who is the one pundit you thought would be bad to work with because of the rivalry you had on the pitch and then realized how different they were outside of football? So basically, who is somebody that you used to hate and now you hate only a little bit less?
Hate's a sort of strong word because you hate all the players that you play against. You very rarely get on because we are competitive beasts. So we take our, you know, hatred on out of each other when you're on the pitch because you want to do what you can do, you know, because you want to win the game. A couple spring to mind. Roy Keane, you know, always been a fiery character, still is, still got a little menacing look in his eyes. But actually, when you work with him, really, really nice guy. I've worked with Roy, I think, once or twice. And I think the other is Robbie Savage. Robbie Savage, I think, wound everyone up in his playing days, just got stuck into everyone, yapped and yapped and yapped like a little terrier. But actually, when you meet him and when you work with him, really nice guy. I think those two, I think, probably spring to mind.
Shaka, we know from this show's history, Craig a lot nicer now than he was in his playing days.
As is our very own Don Hutchinson, let me tell you, Sebi.
Really? Was Don a jerk?
Let me tell you something. But hey, listen, in all seriousness, as players, you kind of know. I mean, when you're involved in that dressing room, on the field, you know, whichever way, there's a lot of testosterone flying around, and then you realize off the field, players are so different from what you've come to expect from them on the field. So, in all seriousness, I didn't have any kind of bad relationships with players on the field, just because you know that. So I say that totally tongue in cheek.
All right, gentlemen, last question. We've come to the end of extra time. Alex wants to know, hey, Seb, how do you feel about Dan getting a nice birthday cake? Did you feel jealous that you didn't get one? So let's address that.
A big cake as well, you know, Seb.
You know, I think it's worth noting.
I don't know if you could tell on camera the photo, but it was big cake. It was nice. It was really nice.
You know, he tagged me on social media to show off just how big the cake was. The picture wasn't even big enough. I mean, it went outside the frame. And we know Craig has on this show said that your ranking within the show's hierarchy is very much reflected by the size of your birthday cake. Which makes me feel, very insecure. I would also like to note that my status here seems to be slipping. In 2019, I was given a cupcake. This year, I was given nothing. So, we see that trend, yeah? It's not going well for your boy.
Well, it's good to see you've let it go, Seth.
I can't wait for 2021 now. This is great.
Yeah, what are they going to do? They're going to come into my refrigerator at home and take my birthday cake out. Not even let me eat it there at home. Cut it right out of my plate. All right, gentlemen, great stuff. Always fun to be with you here on Extra Time. To all the fans and viewers, keep sending your tweets. We will be back on tomorrow's show with a look ahead to all of the action this weekend in European football.